It's called I'm Not a Bad Guy from Jerry Naylor. It's the opening track on his new album, which is called The Rockabilly Legend, and Jerry is with us on the show. Hi, Jerry.
How are you doing there?
I'm very well.
How is it down in Cornwall today?
You know what? It is absolutely stunning.
I'm going to find out if Doc Martin's in.
He's not in the house at the moment.
Okay, all right.
You don't get Doc Martin in America.
Well,
do you?
Actually, my wife is from. Here's the thing, we watch all of these great shows all the time. They're our favorites. My wife is from Nottingham, West Richford. And 47 years we've been married, and we both love your great country, our great country, very, very much. So we're with BBC all the time, and we watch every single one of those great shows, literally.
Fantastic. And you're over here in the UK for a little visit. You got the new album out. We've got so much to talk about. I don't know where to start, if I'm completely honest with you.
Well, we could start with that song you just played, which is great. Glenn Campbell is playing. He was my dearest friend. And when I was lead singer of the Crickets, I brought him out to California in 1960. And I needed a guitar player. I didn't play guitar. And someone told me that, there's this guy up in Albuquerque, New Mexico, who's a great guitarist. So I went up, met Glenn a few months. We wrote a few songs together. We went to American Music Publishing Company in Los Angeles, and they gave us a contract. And that's the beginning.
Do you know what? I'm interested you talk about Glenn Campbell like that, because I think there are a lot of people who like Glenn Campbell but don't know that actually he is a really, really good guitarist.
Oh, he's one of the best. He and Roy Orbison. Now, they say that the same thing goes with Roy. I mean, we love his marvelous voice and all his singing, but he was a great guitar player, and so is Glenn. Amazing. And on all... David, on all of the, I'll say 99%, maybe not all, but most of the Crickets hits during the time from 61 through 65 on Liberty and EMI, Glenn's playing guitar with us. And singing harmony with me. And singing harmony, yeah. Oh, Don't Ever Change, and I'm not a bad guy. Actually, that version that you just heard was the demo version that Glenn and I did for Jerry Allison when he wrote the song. It's a bit different than what was the flip side that we recorded for the actual record.
Yeah. You mentioned the Crickets, so let's talk about them for a little bit, because you took over as lead vocalist in 1961. Big boots to fill there, Jerry.
It was frightening when Jerry Allison came and asked me to do that. I said, I just said, absolutely not. I mean, I don't play guitar. We'll start there. And secondly, I mean, Buddy Holly, he's the number one. I mean, the group is the number one group in the world. And plus, I'm going to be standing up there, and some of these fans are just going to poke a fork right through my life, right through my heart. I'm going to be dead. You know, that's it. But Jerry Allison, well, actually, another Jerry, Jerry Capehart, who was Eddie Cochran's manager, everybody will remember, and bless his heart, he was sitting there. He was with American Music Publishing Company as well. And he said, Jerry, go across the street, go find Jerry Allison and tell him that you're going to take the job. And if you need another guitar player, well, obviously Glenn's there available. But he has Sonny Curtis coming out of the military, and he's gonna be your new guitar player. So go do it. So I did, and it was exactly opposite of anything I was so frightened of, because the fans, until this day, have been just the best in the entire world, literally.
Yes, I can completely understand why you were so nervous about doing that, though, because, as you said, at the time, late 50s, early 60s, Buddy Holly and the Crickets were massive.
Well, here it is. They're historically known as the first rock and roll band, you know, where they wrote their own music, they recorded their own music, and they sang and performed their own music. They are the first rock band in the world. And then Buddy, in his short, amazingly short 18 years, influenced so many people. I mean, we could start with the Beatles and the Stones, and the list just gets going on. And yet today, even contemporary country, you and I love contemporary country, you like ask someone, and, oh, well, I liked Elvis Presley and Buddy Holly. That's it.
Yeah. Well, and, Elvis Presley was a country singer, wasn't he?
Singer, absolutely. And Elvis is the one that started it all for us. I met Elvis a day before Buddy did, on January the 5th, 1955. He came to my hometown, San Angelo, Texas, and I had a little country band, you know, and I did the little opening act there. And then Elvis Presley and and Scotty Moore and Bill Black didn't have drums. They came in. Nobody knew who they were. As a matter of fact, the poster was put out and said Elvis Presley, A-L-V-I-S.
Did Elvis it really?
It really did. I wish we had one right now. We'd put it on eBay, you know. But it's in our book, so we can cut it out and say, all right, here it is. Naylor knew about it. It was actually my foster father, and Tillman Frank had a very – Tillman Franks was the talent coordinator of the Louisiana Hayride, and he called my foster father, Joe Treadway, out in West Texas. He says, I got this kid from Memphis, and his name is Elvis Presley, and we want to bring him out there. Well, they put it in the paper. My foster father put it in the paper, A-L-V-I-S, Elvis Presley. Well – anyway, I'm there singing, and you know, doing my two or three little songs, and then Elvis and Scotty Moore and Bill Black jump on that stage. Now, the people of all age, you know, they've heard That's All Right, Mama. They've heard Blue Moon of Kentucky,
yeah,
and a couple of other songs, but they don't know. They have no idea what to expect, and Elvis goes out there, and. Speaking of fear, and I'll tell you some fear here, and he stands out there, and for the first song, it was a little bit of a shuffle. By the second song, I'm backstage watching a few feet away, the place came undone. Young people, girls, boys, women, children, older people were standing up in this San Angelo Music Auditorium just going crazy. And, of course, he's shaking his legs, but here's the real true story, and it's absolutely the gospel truth. He was so frightened, and he wore those dress pants, you know.
Yeah.
He was so frightened, his legs used to shake. So that wasn't sexual or anything. He wasn't trying to show off.
It was fear.
He was scared to death. It was fear. Absolutely. It's true. Anyway, I stood back about 3 yards away, and I said, that's what I want to do the rest of my life. And it was a world changer. He and I became great friends. The next night, we were in Lubbock. We rode up the road to Lubbock, Texas. My foster father was a co-owner of KPEP in San Angelo and KDAV in Lubbock. And anybody that's seen the Buddy play, that's the set for that. And they'd book these shows, you know. Yeah. Well, Buddy, like I did in San Angelo, had a little band with Bob Montgomery doing, you know, country and hillbilly things. And so he's now backstage. I'm there. Peggy Sue and Jerry Allison were backstage. And all of a sudden, here's Elvis and all these girls rush the stage. And Buddy said, that's what I want to do. That's it. I want those girls to rush to the stage.
They had some pretty big names at the time, didn't they, on those shows? Did Johnny Cash appear on the bill?
He would come along on the second tour. Johnny Cash, he was on the Louisiana Hayride as well. And he came on the second tour, which was just a few months later. But on that one was Billy Walker. Billy was from the Grand Ole Opry. He had the number one song at that time. But it was, yes, the bigger names from the Grand Ole Opry or Louisiana Hayride. Johnny Horton was a big act at those days. And they would be the headlines, but the third night is just as funny, David. We call this the three nights of West Texas that changed the world. The third night we were over in Midland, Texas, Midland, Odessa, Texas, Twin Cities, and Roy Orbison was there. He was there with his swing band. You know, he was doing, you know, Ray Price or Bob Wills would do.
Oh yeah,
and great guitar player, great singer, he had the Wink Westerners, you know, Roy Orbison, the Wink Westerners. And he did the opening, and he saw Elvis, and he said, that's it. That's exactly it. That's what I'm going to do. Here goes my country music songbooks out the window, you know. And it was, that's really the three nights that changed the world. But look what came out of it. I mean, it's Buddy Holly, Roy Orbison, Elvis Presley, you know, got his teeth. Johnny Cash says it better than anybody else. It was the tornado that came through, the Texas tornado, that really spread this rockabilly rock and roll all over the world.
Yeah, fascinating stuff.
Good stuff.
Oh, it's amazing, yeah. I was lucky enough to spend some time at Sun Studios in Memphis, which you're obviously well aware, is associated big with Elvis Presley and Roy Orbison. What an incredible place, and the history and the memories there.
So much magic came out of there. When we were doing the three-hour documentary, and if you haven't seen it, we'll make sure you get a copy of it. But the 3-hour documentary, we did a reenactment of what we call the Big Bang, and which was on July the 5th, 1954. when Elvis went in to do the, he went in there to do these, an audition, but he wanted to be Perry Como or Bing Crosby. And he would do, I saw the, Harbor Lights or Blue Moon, the smoothies. And Sam Phillips at 11 o'clock.
So he wanted to be a crooner, Jerry.
He wanted to be a crooner. Yeah, that's what he wanted. And Sam Phillips was ready to throw him out. Sam had a little whiskey in him. And he said, this is not working out at all. And Scotty Moore brought him in saying, oh, he can sing all this stuff. And Sam Phillips had, and I don't mean for this to be sound racial, it's not at all, but, all of these great black artists, all these great rhythm and blues, great artists, B.B. King and all these great artists were recording in Sam's studio. You're there, so you know what it was. But he couldn't make enough money. Sam couldn't make enough money with that. He just did, there was not a demand, there was not a way to make money. But he said, if I could find a young black, a white boy that could sing like those black guys and move around and perform like them, that would be perfect. Well, Scotty Moore convinced him that this Elvis Presley was the right guy. And Elvis didn't know all that, but he went in and started singing these ballads. And Sam, by 11 o'clock, it was hot and it was terrible, and he was going to run them off. So Bill Black was so, playing slap bass, he was so scared, he went to the men's room, and Scotty had gone after coffee, and all of a sudden, Elvis picks up the old guitar, and he's not a real good, great guitar player, but he picked it and just sort of hamming it, slam it, and says, well, that's all right now, mama, that's all right for you. And Sam stuck his head around that, that little part out of the control room and said, what are you doing out there, boy? What are you doing? And he said, oh, Mr. Phillips, I'm so sorry. And he said, no, keep doing it. That's what I want. That's it. That's it right there. And that's the Big Bang. That's it. That's what started rock and roll.
You must feel really privileged to have been around when it all happened.
Oh, my. I feel that, no one could write this script. I mean, God is the only person in the world and wrote this wonderful script for us to all be together. We played high school gym or auditoriums. We played fairs, and we played everywhere. And never did we think, now when I say we're talking about Carl Perkins, Johnny Cash, Roy Orbison, Jerry Lee Lewis, it would come in there. And a lot of Gene Vincent, we can't leave him out.
Yeah.
And a lot of us, Buddy Knox, there's a whole bunch of, Buddy and I wrote a whole bunch of songs together. And of course, Buddy Holly. Buddy would not get his hit record until 1957. But in that period of, I was fortunate to be able to be a part of the Louisiana Hayride group, even starting at 15, and to be with all of these guys and in the tours and of course in Louisiana, and it was amazing. We had no idea that this is all going to change the world. The only idea we had is, are we going to make enough money to get over to the next place and buy enough gas to get to the next place?
Do you think
that was it?
There'll never be another time like that, though, Jerry, will there?
No, there'll not be. And it was like this. It was very much like this. Why I love this today, and I really appreciate it, David. We would go to the radio stations, talk to the people, hand them their records and our records, and then play them. And that's what the relationship began. So I feel like we've gone full circle, and I my heart's jumping with excitement, really. Really.
We ought to talk about what you're actually doing at the moment, because you've got the legend, the Rockabilly Legends album out. You've got a new single around as well, haven't you?
The new single's I Still Love You, Peggy Sue. This is the 50th anniversary, 18 tracks. It's the 50th anniversary of the Crickets, my time as the lead singer of the Crickets. One of the toughest things was tough to actually joining the Crickets and trying to fill in where Buddy Holly stood. But it was to make sure that we brought forward again that great legacy of Buddy Holly and the Crickets and the Crickets where I was in the 60s Crickets, and bring it forward to the new millennium. So someone said the other day, you'll love this, somebody said the other day, says, I've just reviewed part of your new album. It's sort of like Rascal Flatts on steroids. I said, well, you're half right. But the passion that goes into it, took us 14 months to do this album. And we have some the marvelous fans here in England, particularly, our fan club, international fan club people. They said, whatever you do, give us some new material. And you know, God showered a great blessing on us with a songwriter by the name of John Marr, who came out of our church and wrote I Still Love You, Peggy Sue, everyone on here. Well, six of them on there. And then my grandson's 14 years old. And when he was 10 or 11, he had written a song called All I Want Is You. And it was on a big yellow tablet. And I started fiddling with it, and I didn't change anything. I just started singing. It says, all I want is you, you, you. All I want is you, you, you. All I want is you, you, you. Yeah, you. And all of a sudden, I get with my producer, Keith Summers, and he said, that's a monster. Well, it's on this album. So, you know, that's where it came from.
What a great story. Jerry, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you on the show today.
Oh, David, bless your heart. If you see Doc Martin, I think they're running new news. They're going to have a radio station. I want to be on there.
Jerry, they're here filming at the moment. Not here in the station, but they're in Cornwall filming at the moment. And how about this? When you watch the new series and they've got a scene set in the radio station, the mixing desk they use is mine. I lent it to them.
Oh, great.
So there you are.
David, I'll be looking for it, and I just love it. Say hello to Doc, and does he still have his dog? He wasn't fond of the dog, but does he still have the dog?
I haven't seen the dog lately. No, I don't know. I'm going to play the single. I'm just going to do some travel, then I'll play the single. All right, it's been wonderful to speak to you, Jerry.
David, thank you. God bless you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.